In the March issue of State Magazine, our State Magazine, the editor, Elizabeth Hudson, has written this article about walking in her community. My evening walk takes me past fire station number 43, which is located on Lake Jeanette Road in Greensboro. An American flag and a black and red fire department flag fly from a pole in front of the brick building. She goes on to write, "You know what's inside the building, of course, but maybe you've never noticed the small sign on the outside. The yellow diamond-shaped sign on the outside, mounted on the brick. The sign proclaims this as a safe place." Elizabeth goes on to write, "I know the symbol is a national designation for children in difficult situations, a shelter for youth in trouble. And yet when I see the sign, it always makes me think we all need safe places." She goes on to write in that article, "Years ago, reminiscing when she was a child, she would go to her grandmother's church in Ashboro on every Sunday. She says we snuggled into the same pew every week, she on the inside, me on the aisle. Midway through the hour, just when I began to get squirmy, she reached into her purse and palmed something into my hand, a Brock Star Bright peppermint or a Luden's wild cherry coffee drop. Just like that, my shoulders dropped and I was still." Anybody got a coffee drop? Many of you have experiences such as that. Those deep feelings which are associated with childhood memories. But for many, possibly for you, possibly for our children as they begin the new school year, or a new teacher as she or he begins a new school year, that fear of being the new kid on the block, the feelings of isolation from being left out when they're choosing up sides for a ball game, that emptiness that sometimes comes from just not having a place to belong, a new school, a new home. For some of you, it may not be a big deal, but for most of us, moving and coming to a new place and adjusting and finding that place to belong is a major challenge in life. It's universal to young and old. And for most of us, it never gets any easier. Each of us, all of us, every person needs a place to belong. When I read her article, it got me thinking. It got me thinking about this place, this church. I begin to wonder, is this a safe place for you? Is it a safe place for me? For our community at large? First, I wondered if it is a safe place, are we doing the right kind of things? Next, I thought, do those in our community who see this building that sits on West 3rd Avenue, do they think of it in a safe place? Do others recognize the people, you, who make up First Baptist Lexington, offering a safe place to them? And then, what would be your image of a safe place? And what are you going to do to make this a safe place? The writer of the Hebrews reminds us, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers. For by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. In the book of Exodus, Deuteronomy, and others, we read about the children of Israel. We read about them in slavery, them being freed from slavery, their homelessness in a foreign land of Egypt. And what do we understand? They prayed. They yearned. They wanted to be home in a safe place. Exodus 6, 9 in the book of the paraphrase of the Message reads, I am God. I will bring you out from under the cruel hand labor of Egypt. I will rescue you from slavery. I will redeem you, intervening with great acts of judgment. I will take you with my own people and I will be God to you. You know that I'm God, your God who brings you out from under the cruel hand of Egypt. I'll bring you into the land I promised to give to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And I will give it to you as your country, for I am your God. End of quote. But remember when Moses began to deliver that message to the Israelites? They didn't hear him. They were beaten down in spirit because of the slave conditions that they were living in. But where do we read and what do we hear? The people of Israel groaned under the bondage. They cried out for help. And the text says, God heard their groaning and remembered his covenant with Abraham. And God saw the people and God knew their condition. Is this not the kind of God that we have? A God who hears us and remembers his promises and sees us and knows us? And aren't we reminded again and again that freedom is indeed a gift of God? So God heard their cry and he answered, and the people we read traveled for years and years in the wilderness, but ultimately God brought them to the promised land. They had been in search of a safe place, and God, as God always did and does, delivered them. We could read where God led them with a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. He fed them day by day. Manna, it was called, rain from the sky, but it would only stay good for one day. One day at a time before it would begin to spoil. So they, who were bound in slavery, who were now wandering in the wilderness, were living day by day as we all must learn to live. Day by day, step by step. For each of us, the journey and the search for that safe place is not an easy one. But it is a journey from slavery to freedom, from sin to righteousness, from sickness to wholeness, from darkness to light. The good news of both the Old Testament for the Israelites and for the gospel of us is the promise that God will be with us on the journey all the way. And in his promises, he has delivered the promised land. Paul, in his writing to the Ephesians, shares with us a prayer. I encourage you to read that prayer in the book this week or today. The prayer was intended to be overheard out loud. Generation upon generation, church upon church, has handed this text down and down, confident, I feel, that the petitions that are included in this prayer, that we too will overhear. All through these verses, the plural second person pronoun you makes it clear that it is the community, you and I, who are being lifted to God. If an overheard prayer reveals something of ourselves to us, the first revelation to be gleaned, I think, is the experience that we are a fellowship with God and we are bound to one another. Christians, we might say, are blessed with each other. We're stuck with each other. That may be good or bad at times, but we are told that we are bound in community. Our lives, depending on the community that we live with each other, in all of its messiness, in all of its goodness, in all of its grace, in all of its hurt. The prayer begins with a petition for the presence of the Trinity, for God to move in and with us. So God forges into our communities and then takes nothing less but the power of the Trinity to keep us there, bound together in that place. The Princeton theologian writes, "The prayer suggests that progress will be slow, like a crop inching toward fruitfulness, a building rising brick by brick, both anchored in a love that cannot do without knowledge, but a love through Christ that can break down anything." The apostle prays for God to fill this new dwelling place, which is the church. Even we hear the mysterious language of breadth and length and height and depth that are echoed in Old Testament verbiage. For the apostle prays for a church filled in every dimension by God, with and for the glory of God. This prayer isn't for us a list of assignments. Do this and do that and carry out all. There's nothing in this prayer that hints at a self-help project or a self-improvement regime. The prayer simply invites us into realizing how much God loves us. And it promises that God will fill us when we are empty, make us strong when we are weak, and keep us rooted and grounded when everything else around us is changing. The prayer also, I think, acknowledges for us through Christ that we have access to sources of power and strength, that inner being, that area of ourselves where genuine renewal can occur because of the presence of God. This, of course, happens only one way, through a walk of faith on our part. All the petitions of the prayer are rooted and grounded in love and in our faith commitment, for love lies at the very heart of God's nature and purpose, both in his writing to the Ephesians in the church and to us, and human love on our part is the answer for the church and safe places. And then Paul concludes his prayer, as all prayers, with words of doxology and words of praise and thanksgiving to God. Sunday and Wednesday, for most of us, have been church day. Things are changing. Used to be those were very sacred times where even in the community things weren't planned and stores weren't open, of course. But for Sunday and Wednesday, for most of us, the church stood for years and years as a sacred days, sacred time. Most of the time, we would spend them at church, in worship, and Bible study, and ministry, and we were at church on Wednesdays and Sundays and other days. And many of you, if you were like me, when your parents, anytime the doors of the church were opened, it seemed like you were there as the people of God. On Wednesday, June 17th, the safe and sacred space of the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, was terrorized, as you know, by an individual who chose to do harm. That white painted building has long been a structure on the busy 110 Calhoun Street of Charleston. You've been by it. Maybe you've even been in the church. Since 1816, a building has stood on this sacred ground in Charleston. Mother Emmanuel has a history of its institutional service to that community as an important part of Charleston and the South. We too are connected to First Baptist as this older congregation. But here, Mother Emmanuel has stood, a bastion of religious teachings, a nest of Christian love and hospitality to a community. But during this long and hot summer, we have mourned the 9 good lives of the men and women who were murdered simply because it was a Wednesday night and they were in church. And their beloved Mother Emmanuel was turned into a crime scene. William B. Gregory penned these words in the Post Courier, the Charleston, South Carolina newspaper, and I quote, "Mother Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church is my church. It is where I was Christian as a child. It's where I learned many of the values I take with me daily on life's journey. Those principles of perseverance, kindness to others, respect, godliness, and leadership all were nurtured in the hallowed walls of the sanctuary of her church. It is there that I learned the resolve that has allowed us to deal with the tragic events of June 17 with grace, with love, and forgiveness," he writes. He goes on to write, "We will eventually heal, but we will never be the same. As a trustee and lifelong member of Mother Emmanuel, I want to thank you for your kindness and love you've shown to our congregation." And he ends his article by saying, "Mother Emmanuel has a history of overcoming adversity. For over 200 years, she has stood steadfast, her steeple serving as a beacon for those in need. She will once again stay true to her congregation and survive this terrible ordeal." The church is a safe place. It's a safe place to belong, a haven of hospitality. It is a haven because, like Paul, like the Israelites, like the congregation of Mother Emmanuel, the journey does and will get rough. It even led to death. It led to wandering in the wilderness. But the church must be that place now and always, a place that welcomes us, takes us in, nourishes us, and gives us a home. Wouldn't you like for us to be that kind of church? I know you would. So what does it require of us? It requires of us to be the sort of Christian, a hospitable Christian, a Christian who is on the outlook for those weary travelers. The church meets others where they are on their journey, not on our terms. But it does so in order to bring them along, to bring them into the fellowship, if that is what is needed, but to bound up their wounds like the Good Samaritan. In her book, Traveling Mercies, Anne Lamott shares with us a story about one of her friends. When she was about 7, her best friend got lost one day in their community. The little girl ran up and down the streets of her town looking for something familiar that she could identify, some landmark. She couldn't find it. She was very frightened. Finally, a policeman stopped to help her. He put her in the passenger car, buckled her in, and they drove around that community until she told him to stop. She finally saw something that she recognized. She pointed to the policeman. She said, "That's my church. You can let me out now. This is my church. I can always find my way home from here." And Lamont concludes, "And this is why I've stayed so close to my church. Because no matter how bad I'm feeling, how lost or lonely or frightened, when I see the face of the people at my church and hear their voice, I can always, always find my way home." End of quote. These have been difficult days. However, this is a safe place. And you have, as you have all these years, stood tall as a safe place in this community. And the gospel of Jesus Christ tells us that we have a vast and loving and powerful God who is at work within us and is able to accomplish abundantly far more than we can ask or even imagine. And yes, as simple as it is, believing in God will change you. It will change me. It will change us. It will change this church. For it has and it will continue to do so. So if you will, hang the sign on the door. This is a safe place.